Hey, it's Mary Lou Tyler, and this week we have a really kind of interesting, I think Hillman is the one who found me, but we have two authors, Corey Bray and Hillman Sori, of a book called The Sales Enablement Playbook. I think when Hillman connected to me and I saw the title of his book, I knew that we needed to speak today because, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I definitely have heard a plethora of definitions of what Sales Enablement Playbook is. So Corey and Hillman wrote this book. They're also the co-founders of Closed Loop, which is a sales enablement platform. They're out of San Francisco, and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us, Mary Lou.
Thanks a lot. We're excited to be here.
I just love having two people to talk to. This is really cool. I don't know why this feels so new and fresh, but it does.
We'll see if you still like it at the end.
Indeed. So, okay. Tell us in your words, what is the definition of sales enablement? What is it?
We believe that sales enablement is the concept of extending a prospect-centric mindset to all departments within an organization. So we spent a lot of time thinking about this, and there's tons of definitions running around. You know, it's aligning sales and marketing, or it's content, or it's training, or onboarding, and all of these different things. But every definition that we've heard is either it's too narrow or it's too shallow. And so we started thinking about it and realized that most companies out there say that they're customer-centric. And so when you think about sales enablement, it's taking that existing mindset and tweaking it a little bit to focus on the prospect.
Okay, so does this align at all with persona development and the word persona, or are you using prospect in a different way?
Well, we look at personas as a subset of prospects. So you might be, for any organization, they might be selling to 3 to 5 different personas, and mm-hmm. You know, you can use the strategies, the tactics that we outline in the playbook to be able to engage those folks at the top of the funnel for sure. So that's a component of what we're talking about.
And you know, if this is Hillman, if I could chime in a little bit, a lot of what we heard in working with our customers and clients, I've been a management consultant for 10 years here in the Bay Area, working with a lot of Silicon Valley firms and having conversations with CEOs who are trying to figure out how do we goose the bottom line? How do we enable our sales reps to have more efficacy in the marketplace, which is full of a whole bunch of noise? And what we kept hearing was, you know, I've got a sales enablement manager, or hey, I bought this sales enablement tool, or hey, I've implemented an SDR playbook, and all of these things where people in executive management were believing that each one of these little things could potentially be the silver bullet to increasing the efficacy of their sales team. And when we really stopped to think about it, we came to realize that where they were failing was in thinking that there was a point solution to sales enablement, that there was one little thing that they could purchase, because the marketing is really good, Mary Lou. You see the same stuff that we do, right? So you buy into that, and then you don't realize that this is something that needs to be an ecosystem inside of an organization, that every department needs to be focused on how they can contribute to enabling sales to be more effective, whether that's the knowledge management loop in allowing products to tell sales that this is what we're doing and why we're doing it, persona development, which ties into marketing, HR, which is working on development of professional development and training tools. All of these things come together to, quote unquote, enable a sales team to be more effective. So if we do this with the mindset of looking towards how do we go about engaging with our potential customer, and how does each department contribute to our ability to engage with a potential customer in a marketplace? That's what we mean by a prospect-centric mindset.
Okay. Is there a way that you can tell me? I'm a visual person. I'm trying to visualize. I see the prospect in the center of a bullseye or the center of the ecosystem. And then shooting out from that, are you saying that all the departments who touch the prospect are contributing their know-how, their expertise, their rhythms, their processes, their methods, with the sole result of trying to enable the sales executives to have better conversations, to reduce the lag in the pipeline, all these things, or and also be trained so that they have those conversations which are more meaningful in nature, and they're able to gently guide their prospects through the pipeline. Are all these things part of sales enablement?
You nailed it. And I'm a visual person too. So I saw the bullseye. So at the center of that bullseye is a conversation with a prospect, not even a sale. Let's just say the conversation with the prospect. And this is the salesperson, whether it's an SDR, an AE, someone in enterprise, whatever it might be inside of your organization. The bullseye is that individual moving their mouth to have a conversation with a prospect. Then okay. If you look at the concentric circles that move out, you've potentially got their manager, right? So how is their manager enabling them to be more effective? Through training, through coaching, through providing tools. Then outside of that, maybe you do have someone in an organization that's called a sales enablement professional that's developing scripts, or that is developing tools, or is managing your admin on your CRM, or has provided you with some kind of marketing automation or email automation. Then outside of that, maybe there's a greater scope that correlates to someone who is called VP of People or HR or something like that, who's providing you with some level of training. And then outside of that, maybe you've got the accounting team, which has worked to price the solution in such a way that it can appeal to a specific vertical or persona. And then maybe even more broad than that, you've got legal, which is expediting documents to make sure that this stuff is closing. But all of that entire bullseye is your organization, and those concentric circles become more and more intimate the closer you get to the customer conversation. But each department in the organization has some contribution that it's making to helping a sales team to engage. And it may not be direct, to your point, Mary Lou. It may not be that, hey, from products, I'm getting this specific competitive intelligence language, and I'm going to go regurgitate that when I have a conversation. It could be more nuanced. And it could just be performing your function in such a way that you keep in mind that, gosh, the salesperson is trying to close a deal in the middle of August. And here I am at legal. And if I forestall this thing, then that means it's going to have a detrimental impact on this person's ability to close the deal this quarter. See, just having that kind of consciousness around sales is what we're talking about. And again, it becomes more micro depending upon the department and its intimacy with the sales, with the actual sales conversation. But you hit it on the head. I like the bullseye. Maybe we'll put that on the cover next time.
I like the bullseye for so many things. I think I overuse it, but it's very simplistic for me. And, and it gives a couple things. One is the focus is in the center. And as you move out, you know, depending on what you're using it for, you're going to either leverage existing technology, you're going to leverage people, whatever it is. It's not you personally who's going to do the thing. It may be a manual to automated kind of thing. So I do like the bullseye for that purpose. It does give that sense of, you know, as you move in, things are more concentrated. And then as you move out, you're going to be leveraging and utilizing connections or people or technologies or processes or whatever it is in order to be able to still have the same result, but not humanizing it as much. So that's why I use it.
You know why else I like it? You know, the other reason I like it is because it's taking an external element and focusing it really specifically. You're taking the arrow. That's why the bullseye exists, right?
And
right. Have a focal point. Yeah. I like it. You got something there.
Like I said, I totally overuse it in my world, but it does have a lot of applications for what I'm doing. So the people who listen to this podcast are typically business developers, people responsible for revenue generation, but also responsible for keeping the pipeline full of qualified opportunities and reducing that peak and valley effect. So in your book, if I'm like, okay, I want to do sales enablement, I'm focusing on top of funnel, you know, what are the three or so main points from the book that people will be able to start acting on as soon as they read your book from a top of funnel perspective?
Yeah, totally. So I think probably the first place to start is messaging and understanding not just what your messaging is, but how that messaging relates to specific buyer personas, and then tying that to specific product features, and then finally looping in customer stories. So there's a matrix in the book. I forget what the chart number is, but it essentially says for each buyer persona, you should know what their pain points are, what features address those specific pain points, and then be able to relate those to customer stories around how companies are actually using your product in that way. And I think that's one thing that really separates the great business developers, sales development folks from the ones that aren't as successful. They really understand what's a day in the life of my customer look like, and how does our product fit into that? I think that's the one that I'm probably most excited about.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for our crowd, it's getting them to actually move away from, now a lot of people have done this, but I just talked to somebody this weekend who still hasn't figured out what's my niche, what's my market, who are my people. So, you know, taking it one step up is that you've got to also define who these people are. And at top of funnel, you mentioned 3 to 5 people through the sales cycle. We may only meet 3 or 2 and at top of funnel before we get to a qualified opportunity. And then more people come in as the sale gets closer to close. Now, if you're doing all roles, you'll have to know everything from your book. But if you're doing just prospecting, then you're going to want to be able to focus on those people with whom you're going to bubble up interest, get that first meeting perhaps. And you may, if you're a business developer, do some qualification where you're getting it to the point where you can pass the baton over to your sales executive who takes it the rest of the way. But to your point, you definitely need to have the personas defined from a sales perspective. That's another big thing for me is sales personas are not marketing personas necessarily. So you guys talk about that. And then also this messaging you talked about is really important because each of these personas that we meet and greet at top of funnel will have a very different look and feel of the maybe same pain point, but the way it affects them and the challenges they have around that pain point may be different, as well as the language they use to describe the challenge or pain may be different.
You know, you hit upon something that we talk about in the book, which is the differentiation between marketing and sales from a content perspective and a delivery perspective. You know, it's great for marketing, and I'm a former marketer, so hopefully I can say this, but marketing, we like to get in there, we create these great white papers and case studies, and we've got decks, and we've got all this stuff that's fantastic, and often we don't realize that the salesperson has like 3 to 5 minutes, and within those 3 to 5 minutes, if they're not saying the right thing that uncovers the pain that persona or role or individual that you're talking to is actually dealing with on a regular basis, you're not going to get to that next meeting. So there's often, and I don't know if you've experienced this before, particularly at the top of the funnel, there's often a disconnect between marketing and sales. Marketing will say, hey, I created all this great content, you're not using it. And sales will say, you created a whole bunch of stuff that I can't use, right? So this is another piece around how do we distill that good stuff that marketing's got kind of in compendium format and make it micro content that a salesperson can actually articulate, again, going back to this bullseye, in conversation, whether that conversation be email or in person or via phone, to their target prospect.
Right. And the way that we describe it in my world is marketing really is one to many. They're trying to get as many people as possible to bubble up to the top. And, you know, like I kid with my dogs, if I open my eyelash in the morning, they are on the bed licking my face. It's time to move. You know, just like minute activity that happens, and marketing, that's a win for marketing. For us, it's belly to belly. It's one to one conversation for salespeople. So we have to flip the content that we get from marketing on its side, pull all those relevant pain points that are in that one piece and chunk it down into one pain point per conversation until we hit on which pain point is resonating the most. So, you know, we can use the marketing content. We love the marketing content, but we really need to, you know, flip it sideways and take it and squirrel feed, as Aaron and I used to say in Predictable Revenue, squirrel feed our prospects with one thing at a time to get their arms around, wow, this is really more challenging and more difficult and scarier than I thought, as opposed to giving them, well, you can have this, that, these, and those. You're just giving them one pain point, you're solving it, and maybe you're giving them a cliffhanger until the next pain point that they're going to actually come against if they don't make a decision. So,
absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree with that, Mary Lou. And I think the challenge for companies is defining the we. You know, mm-hmm. is the we the, the individual seller as an independent person, or is the we the organization? And that's really where we see the sales enablement ecosystem popping up, is that, you know, for each one of those specific conversations or specific pieces of messaging, it needs to exist, but who's going to create it? Do you want everybody doing it their own way from scratch? Do you want it being developed from a top-down perspective where one person says, you will do this and this is what you will say? Or do you want it to happen organically, but in a way that other people can collaborate, work together, and learn from what's worked in the past? And I think that's a big challenge that a lot of organizations face, is that we need to have that those frontline people really contributing to the conversation, but not starting over from scratch and doing everything their own way.
So the part about sales enablement that I think is most effective for the audience listening today is that there are really, you mentioned, and you might want to say this again, but you mentioned there are really three types of ways that you can have conversations. You can be a lone wolf, where you're doing your own conversations, you're creating your own templates, you're doing your own emails, you're doing your own scripts, you're having your own sort of rhythm, and it's working, but the rest of the team is not taking advantage of that. Then you have this scripting approach where your management or somebody in the organization says, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is how it's going to look. This is what you're going to say. But there's a third option here, I think, which is what you guys say in the book, which is really about finding that sweet spot of the taking the entire team's effort, managing that effort, taking the results of that effort, and then creating a rhythm, a cadence, a sequence that works based on the results that you're getting from those conversations. That is what I think sales enablement and the technology surrounding it and the methodology gives you that ability to do, is take and leverage the data pieces of tracking the conversations and allowing you to sort of mold what those conversations are going to look like, because you're going to know from the results of previous conversations what's working, what's not, how to order the pain points, in what order works best for the persona, with the goal in mind to reduce the lag in the pipeline and to maximize return on effort. Would you agree that your book is really focused on, and sales from a sales enablement point of view, is to take the many, the results of the many, and create a process, a path that's going to be more successful because you're leveraging the data elements as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about that ecosystem that allows you to get the intelligence from all the really smart people that you hired in your organization, capture it, and then distribute it to the rest of your team. And it's the interesting part is that's what we wrote the book around, and that's actually what our software product does as well.
So I know I've been taking more of your time. We're kind of ahead of my 20 minutes that I like to try to keep it to, but this is such a great topic. And I know there's a lot of questions that are out there. If I was getting started and I'm a manager in it doesn't even matter the size of company, but I know I've heard the word sales enablement because I'm listening to this podcast, I'm focusing on top of funnel. You know, where should I begin? What would you recommend that I do when I hang up this, you know, when I stop listening here? What should I look at in my organization first? And what kind of planning should I go through, very high level, in order to be able to start implementing a sales enablement strategy in my company?
I'm going to say that the first thing you've got to do is something that is a buzzword right now, and I'm going to redefine it a little bit, but you've got to create a playbook for your team. And by playbook, I mean something that includes your competitive differentiators and maybe, you know, identifying how it is, where it is that you win, where it is that your competitors win, and where you battle and what those conversations look like. Harnessing any kind of success stories or customer evidence that you may have that a sales team could use to leverage for conversations. Being able to understand what objections you face and how you not overcome them, but have conversations around those that help a prospect to evolve their thinking, kind of in a challenger sales methodology. Understanding personas, I may have said that already. The idea, though, there are lots of folks out there that create these playbooks, and here's the problem. I don't know if you're a Game of Thrones fan, but playbooks exist in kind of like this dusty old library. You know, it's like Back in the day, you know, when I was in college, we were talking about creating these business plans, and the business plan had all of these SWOT analysis and executive summary and all these other things. There's 50 pages long. You create this thing to get investment, and then it would sit on a shelf. It didn't actually have any efficacy in the management of the organization. It was something that you did as an event, and then it was done. You wiped your brow. You said, great, now let's go do what we're actually really going to do when we get on the floor. What an organization needs to do now, a sales manager, is begin to develop this playbook, but develop it in such a way which allows for a natural feedback loop from your frontline troops, that allows for a feedback loop from product or engineering, from marketing, that allows you as a manager to have dialogue and to archive the types of conversations that might be taking place in Slack right now, they might be taking place at the water cooler, but being able to harness these conversations in such a way that you can distribute them throughout the organization, the sales organization, for a couple reasons. One is that there's so much noise in the marketplace. Once one of your salespeople is keying in on something that works, everybody needs to be leveraging it. Number two, in Silicon Valley, we're out here dealing with these organizations that are trying to scale so quickly. They're bringing on folks who are fresh out of college, have had no sales experience in their background. How do you ramp these people quickly? Well, it's not by having them reinvent the wheel. It's by having them learn a process that you've cultivated and something that you're working on a continuous basis that has a feedback loop that gets better and better and better. And finally, there's so much attrition, right? You've got folks, I think the average sales manager or executive leaves after 18 months. I've seen SDRs or folks who are on the top end of the funnel, business development reps or sales development reps or inside salespeople. Those people can churn at 9 to 18 months. How do you continue to harness and maintain for your organization as institutional knowledge the things that some of those people who are great have uncovered in the process of doing their job inside of your organization? So if you put together the infrastructure around which you are just kind of beginning to manage these types of data inputs from a knowledge management perspective, you'll watch that thing scale and grow exponentially by opening up the opportunity from everybody, you know, from the sales floor down to the executive suite, to be able to input into that knowledge base and everybody to get access to that and filter it. That's the first piece. So to make it pithy, playbook, but not the playbook that you print out and leave on your desk, not the playbook that ends up as some kind of laminated thing that you stick to your computer, but something that you're leveraging inside of your workflow.
You know, it's so funny you bring that up about, you know, collecting dust. In my other life, I do market research reports. And I remember walking into one of my clients' offices and she had 20 years of reports just lined up on top of her desk. And truly, you could just see the dust settling on top of them all. I don't
that
know if you ever
in one of the teams, right?
Yeah. But it's something, it's kind of like have to do. You know, I've got to do an employee loyalty survey every year.
Well, you know what's funny? We go into organizations all the time, Mary Lou, and we'll say, one of the first questions will be like, you know, when we begin this conversation about knowledge management, let's talk about the knowledge you've got. Have you got a playbook? And one of three things happens. Someone does exactly what you said, which basically kind of walks over to a shelf and like blows and the dust goes around the room and they grab something. Or they start looking through Google Docs. They're like, yeah, we had that one consultant in here. Let me see. They start. It's hilarious watching them enter search terms. Play Facebook, playbook as one word, sales team strategy. And then like they find bits and pieces of it with revision dates all over the place. I mean, you know the drill. You've had this experience before. But that's not doing you much good.
Right. And I like the term you guys use of knowledge management, because it's really about the conversations and which conversations with what personas work the best, reduce the lag in the pipeline, and allow us to get to close with a higher percentage. I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, the old predictable revenue formula was really looking at the funnel itself, looking at the average deal size, and then the lag time. So knowledge management is a big part of that. And you're right. I mean, I am teaching a MBA class here in Des Moines, and I'm the only instructor that's teaching sales in an executive MBA class. So people are coming out of college with really not a lot of idea about sales. I mean, I'm an anomaly. I'm a novelty teaching a prospecting class. They just aren't there, which I don't understand why, but it is what it is. So you're right. Having this type of playbook where they can come in and have whatever they need to be effective right away, just nuancing their conversation and getting self-esteem a little higher so that they know that they can have these conversations with the level of persona that they're talking to and meet them where they're at, but also be able to say, look, these are the most successful conversations that we've had for this persona in this order. I mean, how great would that be?
That's it. And it's simple too. I think that's the last piece, is just keeping everything very, very simple. And
yeah,
the cool thing is that it can be complex, but elegant. And
yes,
I think there's a difference between those two. You know, there's a difference between complex and complicated. You know, some of the most advanced calculus formulas are very short, but it takes years to learn how to actually use them in practice.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you take people that have never done it before, you know, sales enablement or developed a lot of things that we've talked about during the show, the first result is going to be overly complicated. And so I think really focusing on simplicity is critical if this is going to be successful.
So the book is The Sales Enablement Playbook by Corey and Hillman. They are out of San Francisco area. They have a company called Close with a Z, C-L-O-Z-E Loop, L-O-O-P. How else can we get a hold of you guys if we want to learn more?
We're all over LinkedIn, so feel free to shoot us a message.
Not hard to find.
So it's Corey Bray, B-R-A-Y, and Hillman Sorey. Hillman is H-I-L-M-O-N, last name S-O-R-E-Y. Look them up on LinkedIn. Really, this has been a great conversation. Thank you both for being a part of the podcast today. And I look forward to seeing how things move along with your company moving into 2018. Thanks again.
Our pleasure. Thanks for having us, Marlo.
Thank you.